Hey, everybody. This is a very special Matt Men interview segment. I'm joined by a good friend of the show, good friend of mine, a guy that you guys know in the pro wrestling world as one of the most reliable sources. That's my personal opinion, opinion of this guy, one of the nicest guys to talk to that cover pro wrestling. That's Sean Ross Sapp from Fightful.com, also FightfulSelect.com. Sean, what's going on, man?
Just trying to stay alive, and trying to get my camera as clear as yours. Look at that.
Yeah, I got a whole setup here. Unnecessary setup here in the studio.
Not unnecessary. Every time I'm on your show, my boss is like, man, he's got a good setup.
Dude, tell him to, you guys call me. Whatever you guys need, I'll hook you guys up. Whatever we need to do to make it even better for you.
Thing, I'm trying to hold off getting a setup like yours till I move, and now my move's been delayed because of everything that's going on. So I'm just sitting here twiddling my thumbs with a propane heater in the background.
That's perfect. That's the way to do it. Yeah. That's the way to do it. So since the last time you were on the show, so much has changed. First of all, your hair is a lot shorter.
Yes,
you got a haircut of a lifetime.
Yeah, that was scary and fun and really awesome. For those who didn't see it, we did a skit with the Nightmare Collective in AEW. And normally I would be completely against something like that because I cover these people and there are accusations of bias and stuff. But I looked at this and I was like, this is a really good way that we can raise some money for charity and get some people to donate their hair. And we were able to get over a dozen people to commit to donating their hair after skit. And we got $5,000 donated to charity, which made me just so excited. That was well worth it. And the funny thing about that is we were supposed to do that in Chicago, C2E2 for Revolution Week, but the angle started to be so terrible. They were like, we got to get this off TV immediately. So they messaged me and they go, how do you feel about Cleveland at the end of January? And I'm like, something's up here. What's going on? And I was like, guys, I hope you know that just because I live in Kentucky, Cleveland is not my backyard. That's 6-7 hours away. So I bussed to Cleveland because I had so much work to do. I was like, I can't afford 14 hours on the road this week. Like, I can't afford to drive that. So I took a bus to Cleveland and went there and got my hair cut off by the Nightmare Collective. It was a lot of fun, though. It's pretty cool having Sick Nick Mondo film you getting your hair cut off. That was pretty awesome.
That's a great experience. And obviously it went to a great cause. And listen, it takes a lot to cut your hair. I know that. Yeah. It's not an easy decision to make, but you did it for a great cause, and I think that's amazing. You obviously have become the voice for many people, and as someone that I know you, we've spoken many times, and I'm actually a fan of your product. So for me, that this is really fun to talk to someone that you kind of understand where they're coming from. The current state of pro wrestling is weird, man. And I think for a number of reasons. First of all, how is it for you as someone that covers pro wrestling to have you had to take different avenues to kind of get the information you're looking for compared to how it was previously? Has that changed at all?
Oh, I mean, I guess a little bit. It's weird because I had like one source like 4 or 5 years ago. One source, one person that I talked to. Then it was two. Then when you start putting out reliable work and work that people know, one, isn't malicious and two, isn't fake, you have people that come to you. And there are different situations that lead to that. Really, the people that I talk to now are the same. And the funny thing is people always assume it's like somebody that I'm friendly with or somebody that had a show with me. They don't ever want to give me news because that's too easily. It's too easy for a guy like Shane Helms to have the finger pointed at him.
Sure.
And Shane's obviously furloughed anyway. So there are a lot of people that are still like, oh my gosh, well, his source is gone. And I'm like, man, that's just not the way it works. There are a lot of different people that have a lot of different motives, and you have to one, decipher and disseminate that responsibly. When I go about asking people things, usually it's somebody that's there. Have you heard something? Who can I ask about this? We've had a lot of people that we talk to that left WWE, whether they got fired, they left, whatever it may be. It's some of the things that I ask them eventually lead me to other people, because a lot of times I'll just give people the courtesy of reaching out. Like last year when there was the Saudi Arabia thing, I reached out to Seth Rollins and I was like, "Hey Seth, heard you gave a speech backstage, did you?" And he just very clearly was like, "You can put me on the record. No, this didn't happen."
Did you have the relationship prior to this with him?
No, I didn't.
There you go. Yeah.
Reached out cold, and some people appreciate that. Now, I've not talked to Seth since, but I had a couple people from the roster that reached out to me and said, "I appreciate that you did that. So if you want to keep this line of communication open for stories about me,
yeah,
that you're more than welcome to." And one of those even straight up said, "Listen, I'm not going to give you any additional news, but if you want to clarify something about me, I would appreciate that, because not a lot of people do that."
Well, you know, and it's interesting because in pro wrestling, right, that has always been it's one of the only, I guess you would call it, I mean, obviously it's a sport, but you would call it combat fighting, right? Let's call it a combat sport or any sport. Yeah. When have athletes been told never talk to the coverage, never talk to the media that covers you? There's no other industry like that doesn't provide access for verification, right?
Well, because I know a lot of people, and I know a lot of people are like, AEW bias. Well, one, AEW doesn't have a proven track record yet of working against that type of thing. I appreciate the fact that Tony Khan does scrums. That gets me to go to his pay-per-views and cover them live. If WWE did them, I would go there too. Triple H has done some. I'm always on those scrums. I'm always there, whether it be via phone or us having somebody there. I like that aspect. The funny thing is, only in NXT do I hear that people are told, don't talk to these people, don't talk to the sheets, anything like that. Yeah. On the main roster, most of the people have been around long enough to know that, well, we got to go through PR if we're doing an on-the-record interview, but you cannot tell me who I'm allowed to talk to, because that defeats the purpose of that whole independent contractor thing that you all are working. So I don't get a lot of that. And I mean, even though I've had some back and forth with PR that hasn't been great for both sides, there have been times when I've done some stuff that they rightfully didn't like and vice versa. I've never once had WWE's PR say, "Don't talk to our wrestlers without us. Don't do this." I've had interviews with WWE wrestlers over the last 3 months, and only one of them was set up by WWE. Some people just are like, yeah, whatever. I'm not going to say anything that's going to get me in trouble.
Listen, it's also a track record, right? If you're not malicious, yes, you're not doing it in a not biased, but in an inappropriate way, right? Because you see that a lot. Like, I on the show, Rich and I, we never have aggression towards the wrestlers. We don't. We separate it, obviously, from what we're seeing, from the person. If we're critical, we do it in a respectful manner, because listen, at the end of the day, no one wants to be told that, that their work is terrible when they're working hard at it, right? So there's different ways that you can present when you don't like something, rather than just throwing your arms up and saying, "This sucks." That's fine. That's not, some people do that, and it works great for them and all to them. I don't knock it. It's just not my approach, and not how we've grown the show. For you, you have a very similar thing. You run stories by the book. You run the story, and then you follow up, which is something you rarely see. People don't follow up on these stories.
There are a few situations with stuff like that where WWE thinks it's malicious, but the wrestlers don't. Like, I'm pretty sure that WWE thinks I'm taking shots at them this week when I put out there, "Hey, these NXT wrestlers aren't given chairs to sit in." Well, normally I wouldn't even write something like that. But when you have a ton of people there that are saying this, obviously it's something that they see as important to them. So therefore, it's going to be important to some of our readers, because that's the way readership works. Things that are important to the wrestlers you're covering are also important to some readers, and some people just don't care. And that's okay. It's the snakes and sparklers approach, I always say. Like from Joe Dirt, you can't just sell the things that you like. You have to worry about the consumer. I'll give you an example, and I won't go too far into detail because it was a really long conversation. I had an interview with Kofi Kingston that was given to me by WWE. I was so happy, but I also knew that he was going through the car wash that day. He was going to have 20 interviews that day.
I've done
it
those.
Was the day before.
They're not fun.
It was the day. And I'm sure that he was not excited to answer the same questions. He's always been nothing but awesome to me whenever I interview him, a complete pro. But I knew he was getting 20 interviews that day. I saw the form where they say, okay, list your requested time. And I said, you know what? You all don't usually give these to me. I'll take whatever time there is. Whatever time you can fit me in, I'll make work. So I know that he's going to be asked a lot of questions about WrestleMania. I know he's going to be asked 100 times, what's it like wrestling in front of nobody?
Yeah.
He's going to be asked that a billion times. So I was like, you know what? Let me ask him some stuff that he's definitely not going to be asked. I'm going to ask him about the story from Chris Jericho's book where Vince McMahon said, maybe one day you'll be over, Kofi, but I doubt it. And Chris Jericho told him, you got to go fight him.
Go punch him. Yeah.
Yes. Because he's never talked about that on the record. And I think it's an amazing story that has never been told by anybody but Jericho. So I asked him. Kofi was amazing about it. He was like, I know the story you're talking about, but I want you to tell it. That way the audio will, the listeners will understand. I asked him about his friendship with CM Punk. They were traveling partners. They were on a CM Punk DVD together. And I asked him about his prior WrestleMania experiences. Well, WWE didn't think that I asked enough questions about this year's WrestleMania.
I had the Snickers side of it. I've interviewed these guys through Snickers for WrestleMania, and then I've gotten a message like, oh, you didn't stay. You've seen it. They hand you a sheet of things you could ask guidance.
So I didn't get that, and I said, hey, listen, if you all want me to touch on a topic, tell me. I'll make sure that topic's covered. If you want the entire interview to be about that, you guys are supplying the interview. I will adhere to that. I think a lot of times people in WWE think that me or other wrestling writers will go rogue and be like, oh, what about that Saudi Arabia plane trip?
Yeah.
That while there is a time and place to ask that, a WWE supplied interview is not that. Yeah. That is
but
not
see,
it.
You have the common sense and to know that. And I feel like a lot of people, or professionalism, that's a better word. You have the professionalism to understand that. We had, I forgot who it was on the interview. I can't remember. This is a couple years ago, and you would probably appreciate this. A big name. It was a big name wrestler. We interviewed him, and I got so much crap for it that I didn't ask. I you know what it was? It was actually Conrad Thompson. I had Conrad on, and we were talking about StarCast, and everything else going on with it. And it was at the same time that Bruce just went to WWE. Yeah, and I believe it was. On the show, he also broke a story about The Undertaker and him. They were supposed to do a podcast and all the stuff that happened, right? And I got a lot of crap for not diving into the Bruce situation. And my response was, listen, this is a private matter of their business, right? This is their business that they're doing. He said that it's not going to affect the show. They're just not going to be touring. They wanted to get something else. Like, does it bother you? Does it upset you? I go, listen, I'm not trying to do that. I don't want to do a gotcha to the guy. He was gracious enough to come on the show. I had a great time interviewing him. I'm not going to try and make him say something that's potentially harmful for him or Bruce.
Yes. There's an element that you have to weigh there. For example, that Kofi interview, it was the day before WrestleMania, but what they had not announced was that tag match was going to be a singles match. And I couldn't ask him about that, even though I knew, because then WWE would be mad at me about that. They felt that it was malicious, and I know it was because I asked something about Jericho and about Punk, and I said, well, you know what? I didn't think that the Punk thing was out of pocket because he's working on backstage. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked it. The Jericho thing, Kofi has never talked about, and it was on the way to a WrestleMania press event, so I thought that was topical. I thought that you could look back at WrestleMania memories of Kofi's past and all that. They didn't seem to like that. There are other things, like other times I've been in Toronto and I did the junket. WWE was awesome to me. Everybody was great to me. Their third party was awesome to me. So it can be kind of contentious, but sometimes really good. I like maintaining positive relationships with these companies, but that does not mean they are exempt from me reporting unfavorable news about. Ring of Honor, I reported a whole lot of unfavorable stuff about them. And then when they started to be good to their wrestlers this year, I reported a bunch of favorable stuff about them. And they have maintained a positive relationship with me throughout all that. WWE, it's starting to come around a little bit more. There are some times where it's iffy, but I would say it's about 50-50 at this point. But I look at the positive a lot more than the negative. But there are some really, really weird things that come up. But ultimately, they got to understand, I'm doing my job, not doing it to be malicious. And I think the wrestlers know at this point that my opinion on their in-ring work is an opinion on a wrestling show and not them personally.
Yeah.
And that's important to me.
Listen, it's fine to be honest. As long as you're not, you know, doing it out of a place of negativity, I guess. I want to ask you, and this is something, we are in a unprecedented period, obviously, with the whole world and everything. So I know when you compare it to pro wrestling, pro wrestling is my new detail in this, but this is a pro wrestling show, so I want to go into it. The changes that we're seeing as far as how shows are produced, how we are getting, how there's no audience, obviously, how they've adapted to this concept of empty arenas and empty buildings. In your opinion, who do you think, I mean, do you think that AEW's done a better job than WWE as far as adapting to this?
Yeah, I think AEW's done a much better job. I think they've done a much better job. And when I looked at the initial shows like that, them putting people at ringside, I don't like it originally because I didn't think it was safe enough. But now they've kind of got it finely tuned. People are taped and people are tested effectively, and it adds a better ambiance than the WWE method. The way WWE did it this week was real weird. It's like, hey, you're going to stand here in a defined space. I think AEW has definitely done better. However, I think WWE cinematic stuff has really set them apart as well. So every company's finding their own ways. I had actually gotten used to no fans. It's weird for me to even think of wrestling with fans. I don't think WWE's done bad at it. They've gotten a lot better, but I think AEW from the jump has done better.
It's so difficult, especially for the performers, right? Because these guys are taught, you know, you're working the audience. And
yeah.
There obviously is a tremendous adjustment. You know, we talk about, the changes, but look at the negative, right? Drew McIntyre, possibly this was going to be a tremendous big-time push for a new guy to have that world championship, to have the WWE title.
Yeah.
When he eliminated Brock Lesnar from that Rumble, he was hot, hot, hot. And, you know, now we're in a position, and it's not his fault. It's not WWE's fault. It's just where we are. I don't know. Will he recover from this? That's the hope. He recovers once the audience, you know, once people are in venues, they're mm-hmm. super hot that they're in a venue and they're witnessing live wrestling. So he may become bigger than ever, or this run could be a dud. I mean, these are the consequences that we face.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I've been paying a lot more attention to the YouTube numbers, and I know they're not definite or anything like that, but I can see what people are going out of their way to see. Like, whether they watched it last night or they didn't, I can see things that people definitely go out of their way to check out. Thus far, Drew McIntyre has been a standout. He's getting numbers on YouTube that only part-timers and Roman Reigns get, which is very promising. That's very good. And, There are other people that don't necessarily do as well, like the Street Profits, Viking Raiders things aren't doing real good. So I'm like, is that hitting for anybody or does that matter at all? It's really weird to try to look at things and determine who is over these days, because right now who is over is who WWE is telling you is over, not the audience.
No, there's no way to dictate it, right? Yeah. You don't know. It's
maybe some online response, but that's really it.
Yeah, I find this current state interesting. I think adding people for WWE is definitely, it was a change in atmosphere for sure. You know, slowly I could see them building that performance center and having a little bit more people and running there. But in your opinion, when do you think they're going to be in venues, in actual, you know, 10,000, 15,000 person buildings. Not necessarily selling it out, but.
Yeah, I think maybe like late fall, October, November for that. I think they'll be in crowds of some sort by like September, maybe. Maybe August. Not August. September or October, maybe. But big venues probably later in the fall, October, November, December. And that's assuming we don't get a second wave.
That's assuming that there's no second wave and we're just, you know, in the mix of it. You know, we've kind of come down from this and moving forward. I find the current state interesting. I agree with you, by the way. AEW's done a tremendous job at making you normalizing this in a better way where you don't. It's a couple of things, right? First of all, they're in a big building. That's key. So you're able to mask a lot of the fact that you're not in a traditional place that you would have your events. Second, just
not as much echo either.
Not much echo. And you have an audience there. You have about 10 to 20 people that are standing there. Probably more now, right? They probably have way more now in that crowd.
I look at that and I'm like, that's the thing. Like WWE's way of doing it, to me, it just feels so unnatural. It feels so forced. And I'm like, damn, at least give them stools, let them sit down or something like that. But I get it. It's because they want the element of safety. But one, they're not testing people.
Yeah.
And two, AEW is, and it's just more natural. People are there by the barricade.
They're checking for your fever.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I know, they're doing a fever check at an offsite location, then bringing people there.
Yeah. I find this alarming that, Will they go back? Now looking at TV ratings, right? And you analyze these, obviously, like everybody else.
Yeah.
The hope is that it bumps up. What do you see happening when they start having people in the audience? When do you see the change happening for the viewership? Because even AEW has suffered. I think the last show before all this happened, they had 960,000? It was in the 900s.
Yeah. And to me, I think NXT or AEW would always be over 1.2, 1.3 if they didn't have competition, period. I think they would do very, very well without competition. But it did suck, and that's something I talked to John Moxley about, was it's hard for him to gauge how he's doing because he was in front of one audience and then not again as champion. It's hard for him to be able to tell what's hitting because, for instance, he doesn't seem to read a lot of the internet stuff. He was very happy with his Jake Hager match. Most people were not. Most people did not like that match. Yeah. But he seemed to think that it went really well. So obviously it's going to be tough for people like that. When Tony Khan can't hear people coming out and I'm sure he's got to rely on the online reaction to the FTR debut. Yeah.
And that's not accurate sometimes, right? The online reaction is not accurate because depending on what circle you're in, as far as reading and seeing what the reaction is, you're going to get a very different feeling. You know, I always ask at the end of a pay-per-view, did you like this pay-per-view? Did you not like this? I don't give an in between. Yes or no. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Yeah. And there's always like the 9% that hated it, right? How do you gauge those guys if that's all you're seeing? How do you know that it was only that percentage? It's weird online. It's really weird. It's a very difficult way. It's not the actual person that's coming to your show. There's a lot of noise with dictating, you know, what's working and what's not. They're going to have an uphill battle. I feel terrible for them. I feel terrible for the wrestlers in general that they have to kind of adapt this. AEW was on a roll. A lot of these guys, you know, think about all the guys that got released that may have had an option and now they don't.
Especially after those 90 days are up. And for some, the 30 days are already up. Fortunately, Deonna got some work with Impact. She's doing a per appearance thing there, but there's going to be a whole lot of people who just don't have paychecks now, especially the NXT people, who many of them were just projects anyway and didn't have a ton of wrestling experience.
Yeah, disposable income for WWE.
Yeah, and it's just WWE clearing the way. And the thing is, they probably shouldn't have hoarded talent anyway.
Yeah.
But it's rough, and there are NXT wrestlers that are still scared that cuts are coming. And I'm like, I think you're safe after a month and a half. I think you're good, but you never know. Vince may decide, nope, sorry, we got to do more. It's not enough.
Yeah, it's so where give me your outlook the next, you know, couple months. You know, if you were to kind of guess where we'll be by, I guess, Royal Rumble, right? I mean, it's crazy to think about this. SummerSlam, I'm not even thinking about. I don't think they'll be doing it in Boston. No. I'd be shocked.
I don't think so either.
I'd be very surprised. I mean, it'd be have to be a turn of events. You know, you got so much to plan for them, you can't do it. So if we're looking past SummerSlam, maybe Survivor Series, we're in a building.
So here's the thing. Yeah, WWE really wanted to do SummerSlam in Boston still. They still they were gonna try to make it work until Boston was straight up like, don't count on it. Don't count on it. And I know that there have been people that said, oh, well, Fenway Park, we'll let them do it without fans. What's the point? The background? Like, cool background, sure.
Yeah.
WWE is going to take all their stuff there to do a no person show. I mean, would it look cool? Yeah, it would look very cool. But, man, I don't see that happening. I think that the pay-per-views will probably be at the Performance Center.
Yeah, it looks that way. I'm just hoping that when things change, when we go back to normal, the business helps and goes back to normal. You know, a lot of these independent shows, I don't know if people are going to get up and go. And even if you can, like Jericho's promoting his cruise for next year. I don't know if people are going to want to get on a cruise next year, depending on what's happening. We don't know. This could go away tomorrow and we'll be fine. Great. That's best case scenario, which is not a reality. But if you're looking at a cruise, oh boy, that's going to be a tough sell.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've got a couple people that are already like, how can I reserve for this? And I'm like, oh, no. The cruise, especially considering that we've got horror stories about COVID-19 from cruises, that's a tough sell for me.
That is a tough sell.
But I'm sure that Jericho is probably already in financially on a lot of that stuff, and that's probably why he did it. I don't want to speak for him. I don't know. I've not heard from him about that. But to me, that's a tough one. Like, I have been asked to cover this one, and I ain't doing it. I'm not getting on that ship and covering this show. No offense. Well, I would love to.
How do you prepare for it, right? How do you prepare for it in, let's say, in November? You don't know what December and January are going to bring. You know, that's the facts here, which I think a lot of people are going to be sitting on this. I think a lot of people are going to be thinking about this all the time. So we're looking at, you know, I want to evaluate what AEW is doing. Obviously, the TNT title is the big story here, unfinished title.
Yes.
People lost their minds that it was incomplete.
I did too when I saw it. When I first saw it before the show, I was like, this has to be a decoy. Yeah. This has to be a decoy that they leaked to somebody. I thought they were trying to find leaks and see who would put that out there. That way they could find out who was leaking dirt to people.
Well, and then you're talking about the picture of him and Tony Khan holding the title, right?
No, there was another one that I saw. It was about an hour and a half before that, and it was just the title. And funny enough, it had Cody Rhodes' nameplate above it. So it kind of spoiled it for me. But, well, it kind of spoiled it for me because, again, I thought it was a decoy. I thought they were just doing it to be like, let's see who feeds this to the dirt sheets. But it wasn't. And as I heard, it really wasn't finished. A lot of people thought it was reactionary and they were just like, oh, well, people didn't like it, so we're going to add to it. No, they really couldn't get the plating done. There wasn't anywhere they could get it done.
Yeah. And that's fine. Listen, it is what it is, right? This is the state that we're in. There's so much stuff going on that you can't figure it out. How if Ring of Honor, I mean, obviously, does Ring of Honor come out of this in any possible positivity? I mean, it seems like they're the ones really that are suffering as far as the top, you know, top North American companies go between WWE, AEW, Impact, and Ring of Honor. To me, they were already on this downward slope, and this may have escalated it.
Yeah, so the funny thing is, I don't know if ROH was making money on their shows anyway, but I tell you what they weren't making. They weren't making any positive PR before this year. And since then, it's been nothing but positive PR. They were ahead of the curve and canceled like all their shows, and they're like, we're not putting anybody in danger. Beyond that, they went and paid everybody. They're still paying people.
Yeah. That's great.
They hired a new guy for their YouTube to give people new content, and it's completely changed their digital footprint. It's increased it significantly. They went and they paid a bunch of people that they had set for one-off appearances who they were not obligated to pay. It's been weird the amount of positive feedback I've gotten from ROH wrestlers. Like, it's unanimous. It's such a drastic change.
Oh, yeah.
Based on a lot of the negative publicity that we saw in the last few months of last year. And that's something that they desperately needed. And is this situation unfortunate? Yes. But for them, they were able to get a lot of positive PR for some people who probably thought less of them along the way.
You know, a lot of it is perception, right? Obviously, there's truth behind everything, but Impact is a great example of perception. If I bring up Impact on the show, people are asking me why I'm still watching Impact. And I bring up, I'm like, have you seen the product? It's way better. It's not the same product that you're talking about from 4 years ago. We're in a whole different world now, so might as well give it a chance. I think for Ring of Honor, they were on such a high with that Garden show with New Japan. I feel like there was no way they were coming out, because that was a big question. Okay, you ran the Garden with New Japan during WrestleMania weekend. Let's say it's sellout, right? I was there, practically a sellout. Where are you going next? What's the next feasible concept that you have other than, well, we'll just piggyback with New Japan? You know, that was a problem. And I think they're getting out of it. I think Marty being there is an asset.
Yes.
I think what they've done is there's a lot of positivity here. But
we've seen the NWA integration already. We've seen him pop up on BTE. We've seen Flip Gordon, who, quite frankly, I can tell you by the numbers that I see, always somebody that people care about more than anybody else there. He re-signed, and he said last year, I'm going wherever Marty's going. He was a man of his word. That was a big person to retain. ROH doesn't retain a lot of people that are look like they'll be game changers, and they were able to retain Marty and Flip. I think that was really good. I think they were smart in putting Jonathan Gresham in charge of the women, too, one of the best wrestlers in the world.
Yep.
I thought they did a lot.
No,
I thought they did a lot to change your perception.
Yeah, a lot of changes. So what are you most excited for before we wrap it up here, going through this, anything that's standing out to you that's going on currently that's popping for you that you could look and say, wow, this is really cool. I like the direction this is going in. I know it's a difficult time in a world where everything is kind of limited, I think positive entertainment, especially from the WWE side, has been lacking. AEW's been doing okay, but obviously they're suffering from the same thing everybody else is. What are you excited that you've seen or you're looking forward to seeing?
More cinematic wrestling, and if it hangs around after all this is done, because Impact, WWE, AEW, NXT, they've all done this, and they've made some changes, like the Riddle cage match this week. That was different. No rope, platform. Like, I wonder if some of these will stick around. The Stadium Stampede, I think that went a lot better than Blood and Guts would have went with all the ingredients involved. I think that the element of humor was there for Stadium Stampede that would not have been there with Blood and Guts. So I'm interested to see if that hangs around specifically, and which stars that have been pushed right now continue to be pushed whenever there are crowds again. Those are the things that I'm most interested in. Also, I got to say this. I hope Skype and Zoom video call interviews stay a normal thing after all this, because I'm loving that. I'm loving getting 35, 40 minutes on video with somebody is really awesome. I'm not Chris Van Vliet. I can't just pull anybody I want aside and say, give me an hour. He's got that market cornered. So I'm really liking these.
Yeah, this is great. I mean, for interviewing, a lot of people have downtime and they're doing it. I 100% agree with you on the cinematic wrestling, right? And what I'm thinking of, okay, how do we extend this, right? And to who?
Yeah.
Who will benefit from this? You know who's going to benefit? Guys like The Undertaker. Mm-hmm. You could do this with, I could see them doing a Broken Skull match. You know?
Yeah.
And here's Austin's big return. It's a 30-minute cinematic match that you see Stone Cold Steve Austin in. You could do this with a plethora of talent that you couldn't. I mean, you know who came to mind last night? Kurt Angle, right? Kurt Angle could have done a wrestling match shot cinematically that with edits and with cuts you would extend this guy's career. I think the Undertaker's, this is, I have no problem seeing the Undertaker only in matches like this moving forward. If we get another, you know, 5 years of a cinematically very well composed, very well shot show, match or show even, it works.
And I think that's what Matt Hardy had in mind when he started to do these years ago. He saw it as an opportunity to extend his career. When the Boneyard match happened, I sent him a message to say, how do you feel about this? And he says, wish they would have done it when I was there, but I'm very happy for Undertaker because this might get a few more years out of him.
And
it's going to benefit a lot of people. They could do Sting and Undertaker like this.
This is like the way to do it, right? How many of those dream matches can you think of? I mean, I'll get goosebumps. You know what? A Hulk Hogan return. Hogan's Beach Club match. Oh, Jimmy Hart pops out of the closet, hits you with the guitar. The whole thing. You could work this whole thing with Hulk Hogan returning.
I love it because everyone has like their own stage, like it's Street Fighter 2 or something. Like,
that's exactly what it is. Hogan has the Beach Club, Undertaker has the graveyard. Stone Cold Steve Austin at the Broken Skull Ranch.
There are just so many good ones that they could do. And Steve Austin with extensive acting experience. You could do some stuff with The Rock like that. There's a lot of things.
Where would you put The Rock's match? What would his stage be? Would it be Hollywood?
I don't know, but you would have to have Kevin Hart make a cameo.
Kevin Hart? He throws Kevin Hart at you? That's what he does?
Yes.
That's how he just grabs out of nowhere, just grabs Kevin Hart, just chucks him at you. You got a whole thing. WWE, if you listen to this, I want to see all of this. I don't care. Bring them all back. I want to see guys that I have not seen in years. I want to see them in bizarro stages. I want to see Vince have a corporate match in his office.
Yeah. Oh,
when it gets the dinosaur bones, fighting over the dinosaur bones in there.
There are so many. I'm glad they did the Titan Towers Money in the Bank because. And when I talked to Dana Brooke, that was a thing she was very happy about, too, because that's history. Titan Tower is a part of history that we have not got to see a lot of. And we got to because of that. So I'm very happy that they did that. There are a lot of them. One that I really want to see is one in the WWE warehouse.
So I was doing a live watch along when the Money in the Bank was happening. And I have a phone system here. We took phone calls and I got a call. And I recognized the voice. I didn't want to say who it was, but I recognized the voice. It's somebody that that tends to give me good information. Mm-hmm. And he called as Bruce from Connecticut during the pay-per-view. And there was a toilet flushing in the back the whole time as he's doing it. And I'm like, okay, his bit is getting a little cheesy. You know, I'm like, what are you doing, Bruce? He's like, I'm on the toilet, whatever he was doing. You know, he did this whole rant, like the Paul Heyman style rant, talking about the toilet. 20 minutes later, Bruce is sitting... And he flushed, you know, they did the whole bit on TV. It wasn't Bruce Prichard that called me, but it was someone that was in the know. And I was like, oh, man, that's what he was doing. I'm like, that was pretty cool. Live on the air. And people, you know, the audience, the crowd, the viewers lost their mind that somebody called and essentially leaked it 20 minutes before it aired, which was pretty cool.
Well, tonight, as we film this, I just put this on FightfulSelect.com, so I'll say it here. Tonight, they're utilizing the set behind Full Sail University. The Velveteen Dream Adam Cole match will be effectively an Iron Circle match. They're putting a bunch of cars around a ring in the middle of this set, which I actually got lost on one time walking to Full Sail University. But they're doing a lot of different things. The Ciampa Gargano thing was different. Even the Riddle Thatcher cage match, even though it wasn't cinematic, it was different. We're seeing the biggest advancement in wrestling stipulations in decades, maybe, because before this, when was the last great new wrestling match stipulation that you've seen?
Oh God. Somebody asked me that and I was thinking about it, right? I would say the
Casino ladder match was great. Loved it. Loved the ladder match.
Hell in a Cell was the last big one that was added, right?
I liked Elimination Chamber a lot.
Elimination Chamber.
And
yeah.
Money in the Bank was good, but that's just a ladder match. Yeah. The stipulation that emerges from it is great. The match itself, really, there hadn't been anything amazing in 18 years or so.
Yeah.
And that's wild because Hell in a Cell was a few years before that. You went from only having one-on-one matches and cage matches to where in like 95, 96, they're like, okay, let's try some triple threats. Okay, let's try a Hell in a Cell. Let's try a ladder. Let's try all this stuff. And since then, the creativity has been stifled significantly with a lot of that. So I think that this has really helped the creativity of pro wrestling. And hey, wrestling society walked so Lucha Underground could run, and Lucha Underground ran so AEW and WWE could do a long jump with stuff like that. And I'm okay with that. I'm all right with that.
I'm fine with that too. Listen, how about like last night? Great example, right? Reinventing a cage match.
Yeah.
It was a cage match that they made. I was doing the back and forth throughout the night, and then I rewatched everything in the morning before the show. I got to tell you, I was shocked how good they pulled off a standard cage match. And they shot it differently. It was shot like the UFC, where you had that overhead shot of the guys on the ground. I thought it was I was actually very surprised how well it came out. Very surprised.
Well, I love that type of wrestling anyway. I mean, that's what I was trained in, was catch-as-catch-can wrestling, and you don't use the ropes. You learn how to wrestle without using the ropes just in case you never have ropes to use. And that's the type of thing they did, and then they added in, like, the Showtime kick. And when I got sent a picture of the construction of the cage, and I thought the platform was up there just as, like, a construction thing. And I joked, like, I hope they keep the platform. And the person said, they are. And I was like, funny joke. Then I saw it, and I couldn't have been more happy. That's something that I don't know if they could have done with an audience. But maybe they could, because it was full sail, so you don't have people all the way up. I have really loved the creativity on stuff like that, because I'll put on Twitter, hey, guys, what kind of new match type would you like to see? And all due respect to my followers, 95% are absolute garbage. And it's like, oh, 2 out of 3 falls where one match is this. And I'm like, no, that's not different. That's just doing more matches with old gimmicks. Like, it's not easy to come up with new match ideas like that. So I'm glad that they've done it.
No, it's I'm very surprised at that. It blew my mind. And listen, the Gargano Ciampa match. That was great. You know, the storytelling there.
I thought that
option.
Was,
we have another option.
They went the full hour with it. I think that was kind of cool too. You can be flexible. They can last 10 minutes or they can last an hour.
Yep. There's a lot going on. Sean, it's always a pleasure to have you on. We're out of time. We have so much going on. I know you're busy. You have a lot going on. Fightful Select is interesting. I want to let everybody know. So you posted obviously what you were talking about today here, about, you know, the big match that they're filming. That is a Fightful Select premium. You go to FightfulSelect.com. You can sign up, anywhere from $5 all the way up, right?
Yeah. We are working hopefully this year to get it integrated from Patreon to, our actual website. It'll always be FightfulSelect.com. It'll always be FightfulSelect.com. And you get like 20 podcasts a month on that, Raw, SmackDown reviews, extra ones. I do a Q&A every single week. You can ask me really whatever you want there. There are just tons of perks there. We're breaking more news than really I think anybody at this point. We had some news on some WWE call-ups today. We had an exclusive on Deonna Purrazzo's Impact deal. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. All the stuff about NXT, WWE's audience. We've just got a ton of stuff up there. And if you all subscribe, I really appreciate it, because I know that times are hard right now. But I appreciate you having me on.
No, absolutely, man. And I'd love to do this more often with you. One of my favorite people that covers professional wrestling, one of my favorite pro wrestling journalists is you. And this makes it super easy. And I'd love to have you on more. And you're doing some amazing stuff, obviously. And just keep doing it. It's amazing. Guys,
thank you so much, man. That means a lot coming from you.
No, dude, thank you. Guys, that's it for this week. We're going to be back with another interview next week. I got another great guest. I'm going to keep it a secret. I'm not going to tell you who it is until next week. I'll see you.